The last portion of our healing is a way of life. And healing is a way of life. We've talked about the idea that all healing is done right now. All healing is complete. All healing is complete. We are already healed. There's nothing to heal. Then why are we sharing and teaching ideas about healing? Why are we talking about healing? Well, healing is just a term. Now, Ed mentioned, I take exception with your phrase and your word about one of the ideas you had. And I said, well, why is that? And she said, well, I think it in a little different way. What was your word, Ed?
Well, your word. I heard you say that mind is everything, and I said
mind is everything. Spirit is everything.
And that just as the body is a vehicle for the mind is a vehicle for spirit. But it's all energy anyway.
Yeah, and it's all one.
Right.
Yeah. So now, you see, this is what we do to ourselves, which is a great thing to do. We confuse ourselves by giving labels to things. And the more labels we give to things, the more we confuse ourselves, the more we limit ourselves. And it doesn't really matter. Now, is this Phyllis Sparks here? No. Is this Phyllis Sparks here? No. Is this Phyllis Sparks here? The heart, the soul, the body? No. Phyllis Sparks is a concept that she hasn't even begun to express. She is a magic lady that has not yet begun to be magic. She is only being human. And the day will come when she lets go of that humanness. She lets go of the limitations of the humanness. And she will not be a beautiful woman. She will not be an unbeautiful woman. She will not be a woman. She will not be a man. She will be, as Ed says, spirit. She will be the essence of her archetypal self. Now, when do we get to be the essence of our archetypal self? When we let go of all of our human attitudes and feelings, and that includes our languages, our words. I speak in many different countries, and I'm translated into many different languages, and I listen. I don't speak those languages, but I listen. And I know when they're not saying what I say. I know when they're not saying exactly the idea I want to get across. So then I put it in other words and other words. There are times I go 7 different phrases to finally get them to say what I want them to say. And it's not because what I want them to say is so terribly important. It's that I want them to understand what I mean by what I'm getting them to say. So, the day that Phyllis wakes up and she says, I am God. I am the allness. I am the spirit. I am the wholeness. I am the peace. What will happen? You won't see her anymore. You won't see her anymore. You won't see her anymore because she'll be invisible to anyone who is not living on that same level of consciousness. When she opens up her inner self to its highest and its greatest, its archetypal expression, no one who is not on that consciousness will be able to see her. You will not see her as a human being because you will only see her if she plays the role of a human. You'll see her. What happened to Jesus? Jesus had his experience, and he went through his transformation, his resurrection, and when he did, he came out of this tomb, and he walked up the road, and the women didn't recognize him. The disciples didn't recognize him. Here he was with his whole 12 crowd that he had been with, or 11, all those years, 3 years, and they didn't say yes or no, but what did Thomas say? Hey! Where's your stigmata? Where's your place where the nails have been put in your hand and stuff like that? You know, you're not Jesus. You're not that guy. And he said, that's right. I am the illumined one. But I should have had the symbols, and I will go back to the drawing board and get them. So he went back and got the symbols, the stigmata. He got those things in his being so they could believe in him. But that's part of his show. Now, what's the show that Phyllis is going to play? Is she going to play the game of having stigmata on her? No way. That's not her game. Does she want to be hung on a cross? No way. Right? No way. Does she want to prove to you guys that what she teaches is wonderful and good? No way. She just drinks her way through heaven. No. What does she do? What does she do? She does only one thing. She is herself, and she has fun. Just ask her mother. Right? Yes. She is herself and has fun, and she doesn't care. Now, the moment she doesn't care about Phyllis anymore, see, she doesn't really care about the world. The moment she doesn't care about Phyllis anymore, then unless you are on that same high level of not needing the human, you won't see her anymore. Now, what is going to take place in her life when she reaches that high level? What is going to take place in her life when she steps into the archetypal self that this is representative of this Phyllis? Will she no longer have an interest in the world? Okay, this is what she's going to do. Question. How to handle conflict around you when you yourself feel not in conflict? You must feel in conflict if you recognize it's there. Example, loud different or of opinion or too many people wanting to change game rules at once. Okay, you see, when you are an illumined being, it doesn't make any difference, does it? When you are an illumined being, it doesn't make any difference. Change the rules all you want. Hey, I'll play by your rules. I don't care. I am not limited by your rules. You say fire is hot. That's fine, fire is hot. But to me, I can touch fire and it's not hot. But I don't tell you that. You tell me fire is hot, so I act, whoops, it's a hot stove. Yeah. You say you have to have water. How many of you know about Saint-Germain? One of you. Saint-Germain is a character out of history. And Saint-Germain is a consciousness, an attitude. Saint-Germain lives throughout history and is still expressing it, Mount Shasta and many other places around the world, and doing wonderful things, being himself. Does he need food? Nope. Does he need money? Nope. When he wants money, he just says, oh, here are some diamonds. Guess what? Here are some diamonds, you know? And what happens? They're real. But they are acceptable diamonds. They are not diamonds that are bogus. They are not diamonds that are not absolutely perfect according to whatever a diamond is. When he needs to experience something, let's say he wants to go skiing. He's got a ski suit on. No? He wants to go dancing. He's got his dancing suit on. He wants a beautiful dancing partner. He wants Ginger Rogers. And so, who's in front of him? Ginger Rogers. All time is now, all places here, all spaces here. This is the, you say, Herb, I think you have gone over the bend. That sort of stuff just doesn't take place. Well, come on now. Get yourself in gear. Do you watch Star Trek?
No.
Well, bully for you. Do you watch Star Trek? I love Star Trek. I think Star Trek is just neat. And Star Trek is where the crazy things happen. The scientists are doing things that are totally impossible to do. And why not? And Buck Rogers years ago, some of you people who are over 10, you know about that. Buck Rogers years ago did many fantastic things in science. And today, the scientists are doing it. Rocket ships to the moon, you know? Spaceships, spacesuits, helicopters. Leonardo da Vinci, remember? He drew helicopters. He drew submarines. He drew aqueducts. He drew all sorts of crazy things which were not done at that time. Diving bells, you know. He just didn't finish doing his drawing. He should have drawn an engine for the diving bell to compress the air and send it down to the diving bell. He didn't complete his project, but he had the idea. He was open to universal mind, to universal spirit, to the allness, to the isness, to that degree. And as being a great artist, he just sketched these things out and brought them forth. Now, in his mind at that time, the 14th century, he was thinking these beautiful thoughts. He was thinking thoughts that in the 20th century, 21st century, 22nd century, are only now first coming into being. You see, people like Star Trek, people like these way out minds, they're thinking up things that are great. I read one science fiction story, I think it was Ron Hubbard of Dianetics and Scientology. He wrote this story about this spaceship, and you get in the spaceship and you travel around, and you get tired or you get old and so forth. And so you jump into this room, and you get in this bed. You pull down this cover on top of you, and you're in there for 20 minutes or an hour. And then you come out, and you're the dynamic young person that went in there into the spaceship in the first place. You return to your original purity and integrity. Now, what a joke! What a joke! What a nice joke. Why not? Now, why not, even without having that bed, I return to my original purity and integrity? If you can do it with a physiological function, with a physical vehicle like this bed, with this, you know, energy in the bed, why not just do it by saying, it is done? Why not? You see, the Star Trek tries to use the scientific technology to prove its projects, or at least to make it somewhat realistic to our very demanding minds. And it's a lot of fun. But you see, it's the mind. It's the spirit, it's the soul, it's the consciousness, it's the allness. Why aren't you wearing the skirts that you wore back in the 1800s? Why aren't you wearing the clothing that you wore back in the 12th century? You know, why aren't you wearing the knight's clothing of iron and metal and stuff like that? Why aren't you wearing that stuff? Well, it's a different world we're in, you know? What are the cops doing? They're going back to the metal suits. They're called bulletproof, you know? And they wear it over the body where a bullet going through might damage them. It could hurt the arms too, but the arms can always be, you know, worked on. But they cover the whole body. A body suit, they call it, you know? And it's made out of Gore-Tex now. And Gore-Tex is used for skiing and other clothing, you know? Lovely stuff. Very warm, very protective. And they knit in there a metal fabric. Wouldn't the knights of years ago love to wear one of those things instead of the things they had to wear? Getting up on their horses with all that metal on them. You know, that must have been really tough. Think of those horses. Those horses were strong boys, you know? Yeah. Yeah, they were really quite something. Now, I'm giving you these thoughts because your archetypal reality, your original purity and integrity, that's what the word says in the dictionary, to heal, to return to your original purity and integrity, to heal, to return to your original purity and integrity. We want to return to our original purity and integrity. We want to express the divinity that we are. Now, what is that divinity? That divinity is our wholeness. That divinity is our reality. Now, she was telling me a story about her family and how they were going through some value judgments. And how is she going to teach her daughters value judgments? And I say, just tell your daughters, you have integrity. You have sincerity. You are a wonderful, knowledgeable, sincere person. You know what is right. You know what is not right. You know that it is not right to cheat in school. Not that they cheat. I'm using other illustrations here. You know that it's not right to take something that doesn't belong to you. You know that that's not right. And you don't teach them that you know it's not right to steal and not right to do this. You just say, you have integrity. You have purity. You are a beautiful being. You are a beautiful being. And do you think this person is going to ever not be a beautiful being? You're going to be a beautiful being because I expect it out of you. I don't tell you why. We were looking at her little statement here on her blouse that says, love is not abuse. The law of cause and effect is a very powerful thing. We'll be speaking about it tomorrow morning. The law of cause and effect is a very powerful thing. The law of cause and effect does not know not. The law of cause and effect only knows to do. It only knows to put a cause in motion. Love is abuse. Well, now, that's not a nice thing to say about love, is it? Love is gentle. Love is caring. Love is wonderful. Now, the lady who created these thoughts and these words was sincere. She was a very gentle, caring lady to do this. But she didn't know that any time you speak into the law of cause and effect, if you say a negative, the law reads it as a positive. The law reads it as a positive. You all know about these sheets. You answer a test, and you have a little circle that says, fill in the circle, so that you say yes or no, or yes or no, or yes or no, or yes or no. Well, now, if you put a no and you meant a yes, the answer sheet is not going to know the difference, is it? The answer sheet's going to say, you said no here. And the answer is yes. And the answer sheet says, you are stupid. The answer sheet doesn't say that. The answer sheet says, you had 7 no's and you had 6 yeses, and 4 of the no's were incorrect, and 3 of the yeses were incorrect. You didn't do very well. But you see, the answer sheet is like the law. It doesn't know right or wrong, good or bad. It merely says, this is what cause you have put in motion. This is what response you're going to have. I only give you the reflection of what you have said. And I'm not judging you. I do not care whether you do it or whether you don't do it. This is what happens. So, you say, I have integrity. Do you have integrity then? You do everything you can to live in integrity. I live in my eternally perfect ideal, spirit, mind, and body. I live in my eternally perfect ideal, spirit, mind, and body. Shoulders back, chest up, chin out, you know. I live in my eternally perfect ideal, spirit, mind, and body. And I live in my eternally perfect ideal, spirit, mind, and body. Saying, man, oh man, you know. There goes Arnie Schwarzenegger, you know. I live in my eternally perfect ideal, spirit, mind, and body. Why not, you know? Why not? I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. What's this guy's name? Reeves, who played Superman? Remember him?
Christopher Reeves.
Remember him? Okay.
He gets a lot of the medical care here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. All right. Christopher Reeves is what? I'm not asking you questions. I'm telling you. Christopher Reeves is what?
Superman.
Christopher Reeves is Superman. Remember? Christopher Reeves is whole and perfect. Christopher Reeves expresses divinity. He expresses magnificence. He expresses all that is beautiful and wonderful. Christopher Reeves is the epitome of the perfect man, Superman, you know? Okay, now, Christopher Reeves went out and had an experience which caused him to act differently. Naughty, naughty, naughty boy, you know? Shape up. Christopher, get your act back in order. I'm doing my best. I'm fighting these fights. I'm against Greenpeace. I mean, I'm against the killing of the whales. I'm against the burning of the sand. I mean, he's against all this stuff. And we look at him and say, what a noble man to be against these things. Love is not. When you are against something, you are creating yourself in problems. Christopher Reeves is a good man. He thinks beautiful thoughts. He wants to do the right thing. But because he is going contrary to principle, to law, not evilly, but he's just going contrary to it. Her daughter says, I'm not a bad girl, Mommy. I'm not a bad girl. She probably isn't. But Mommy says, I wonder. Did you cheat on that test or not? You know? And Mommy should not even doubt. She says, I know you're not. I know you are a good girl. Yes, Mommy, I'm a good girl. Then say that. Don't go saying, I'm not a bad girl. I'm a good girl. You follow me? Words are very important, and that's what we're sharing with you throughout this seminar today. The power of the words. The power of the words to heal. Now, Christopher Reeves is going through an interesting experience. You look at a picture of Christopher Reeves, and what do you see? A healthy-looking face, right? A real healthy-looking face. You look at him sitting there in his wheelchair, and he looks really healthy. If he didn't have the wheelchair, you'd say to yourself, nice guy, yeah. Okay. Let's mess Christopher Reeves up, shall we? Just as an example. And let's see Christopher Reeves whole and perfect. Let's see Christopher Reeves, his archetypal self, his Superman self. Isn't that nice? Let's see Christopher Reeves as he was in the movies playing Superman. And let's see him fantastic. Now, did Christopher Reeves like to ride a horse? You bet he did. Does he like to ride a horse even now? Yes. Now, I had a dream, and in the dream, I dreamed that my son was flying an airplane, which he flies all the time. And he's a fabulous pilot, always great, doing everything perfect. And then in the dream, I started dreaming that he was going to crash the airplane. It started going down. My son doesn't crash airplanes. Stop! Stop the dream. Back up, back up, back up. Okay, now, my son always flies perfectly. Now, Mark, land the plane, and he landed the plane. This is my dream. I'm the director of my dream. I'm the director of my thoughts. I'm the director of my world. Mark, land your plane properly. Okay, Dad. And he did. If we take charge of every thought that goes into our mind, we will be really masters. Okay? How is Christopher Reeve? He's whole and perfect. We roll back the picture of him doing whatever he did that brought him his attitude that he's got right now, and we see him prior to that time. We see him in the wholeness of his fantastic quality as a man. We see him not fighting against life's vicissitudes. We see him supporting and cooperating with life's beauty and goodness and wholeness. If you want Greenpeace, what do? Plant a tree. If you want to save the whales, what do? You say, there now is peace in the ocean, and all the whales are living harmoniously in the ocean. All the whales are doing their beautiful thing. When the oceans beach themselves, when the whales beach themselves, we don't say, what is the whale doing beaching itself? Why is it having this problem? We just say, all the whales are doing whatever is normal for them to do. And if beaching themselves at certain times of their life is normal for them to do, then that's normal. There's lots of other whales doing their thing. Where do the elephants go to die, huh? Where do the elephants go to die? Just read Tarzan, you'll find out all about that stuff. They go through the certain place in the jungle where elephants go to die. Where did whales go to die? They beach themselves. They beach themselves because they are done living and they choose to expire. And so they pull themselves up on the beach and they find they can die more pleasantly and quickly on the beach. They clutter up the beach where civilization is, but where civilization is not, you don't even know that they're doing that. You don't even know that. This is nature's way. Now, do you want to change the whale's manner of leaving their physical bodies? No. Do you want to change the way the dolphins do it? You want to change the way the world wants it? The Brazilians deserve to have agricultural land just as much as the Europeans and the Americans do. The Americans cut down the forest like crazy and planted crops and planted seeds. Remember that? Before our time, but it's our history. Now, we don't want the Brazilians to do it because it's messing up the Greenpeace, it's messing up the environment, it's messing up the world. And the rain stopped falling, and this, hey, that's part of life, isn't it? No, that's part of life. Give up. Give up. Say, the hell with it. That's just part of life. We're born and we die. Give up. Or or we can be masters. Now there is peace on earth, and it has begun with me. Now there is peace on earth, the peace that was meant to be. And there is where it is. It began with me, the peace that was meant to be. It began with me. But is it meant to be? It's what I want. It's what I choose. I choose a world of peace and harmony and joy. I choose everyone harmonious with everyone else. I choose everyone at peace. Well, what about the coyote chasing the squirrel or the rabbit for dinner? Well, I choose to make the coyote a vegetarian. But I don't really choose to do that. I get my nose out of business that is none of my concern. My concern is to create myself in a world of harmony and peace and love. My concern is to create my life a joyful, peaceful experience of love and magnificence. What's your daughter doing? Your daughter is a fabulous girl. Your daughter does everything perfect because you have given her principles to live by. And wherever she goes, with whatever crowd she runs with, she is doing beautiful things. You don't have to question her. You don't have to say, who is that girl you were out with last night? Who is that boy you were out with? Where are you going? What are you doing? If you taught her as a mother values, then she has your values. If you did not do a good job of teaching her as a mother, then she will have values that are not very strong. Now, our opportunity, the only opportunity we have, is to train our young in the way that they should go. That's the responsibility we have. Mother bears do that with their baby cubs. You know, snakes do that with their baby snakes. Frogs do that with their baby frogs. You know, it's a wonderful thing. And we train them in the way they should go. What is important for them as they are growing up and expanding themselves and expressing themselves. Then we take this thing right here, see? This grand and wonderful proboscis that we have here. This nose that we have. And we get it out of every other business that has no place for it to be. Is she a fabulous person? She wouldn't be in my life if she weren't a fabulous person. Are you a most magnificent being? You wouldn't be in my world if you weren't magnificent. If you weren't just like me, thinking just like me, believing just like me, that all is good and all is very good, all is beautiful, all is fantastic, if you didn't believe that way, you wouldn't be in my world. You wouldn't be listening to me. You'd get up and say, oh, this is the wrong crowd. I thought I was in the devil-worshipping cult, you know. And you say, they're meeting next door. Okay, I'll go over there. But, you see, you know who you are. You know that this is your way, that this is your belief, that this is what is important to you. You know that you are divine. You know that you are wonderful. You know that your daughters always follow their own inner perfect wisdom. You know that your daughters always do everything that is for their highest and best. And you don't worry about a thing. You don't worry about what crowd they're running with. You don't worry about who they're playing checkers with and things like that. You know? You have to be very careful. You just wrap yourself in your pure white light of love. Hey, I'm the pure white light of love. Why should I wrap myself in my pure white light of love? As a reminder. As a reminder. And then you wrap your world in your pure white light of love. Everybody here in this room, I wrap in my pure white light of love. Every one of you is fantastic. Every one of you is an ascended master. Oh, really? Yes, you are. Yes, you are. All of you are divine. All of you are whole and perfect. I'm not teaching you how to heal yourself. I'm teaching you how to get a good high out of using the energy over the skin of your body. That's nice. Much better than a shot of whiskey or a bottle of beer, you know. A shot of whiskey and a bottle of beer is fine, too, if that pleases you. But the thing is, use everything where you are the master. Why are you using a shot of whiskey or a bottle of beer? Because you want the effect that it brings. And you have no control over that effect. You just know that, no, I don't care anymore, you know. But you use the energy massage, and you bring your vibrations to a very high level, and you have done it to yourself. You feel good. You feel in charge of yourself. You feel a total wonderful rhythmic activity about who you are, and it is wonderful. It is wonderful. All of you are just so utterly fantastic. You're so utterly perfect in every way. But when do you want to start out picturing that perfection, Anna? When do you want to start out picturing that perfection that you are?
Right now.
Right now. Right now. Fancy, what do you want to?
Right now.
I won't ask you.
Okay.
As you tell me, always the right answer. Okay, now, John, when do you want to start picturing, out picturing the perfection that you are?
Right now.
Right now. Adele, what do you want to do?
Right now.
Right now. Sally?
Right now.
Mm-hmm. Sir Robert?
I am.
Now, isn't that interesting? He doesn't want to start out picturing it. He is it. He is it. I am. Is that a good answer? Yeah.
Because right now it implies that maybe you weren't.
Yeah, but no, no. You are not being a hypocrite. You are saying, I am. And if you am, then you ain't are. You know, it is. It, you cannot even think that you might not be, or it might be misunderstood. You am.
I are.
I are. When, my dear Sir Rich?
I am.
Ich bin, yeah.
And I would have said that if he hadn't.
I know. Hey, believe yourself. I believe you. You see, I look at you and I hear only what you say. I don't hear what anyone else has said around here. But some of you listen to what somebody else says instead of saying, what do I really want to say? What does Herb want me to say? You know, that's a possibility. Mr. Ed, how is your horse barn today?
Was my horse born?
Do you know the story of Mr. Ed on television?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that is. Oh, that Mr. Ed. Oh, that Mr. Ed. You remember that? Pardon me. Mr. Ed, you are?
I am.
You am. That's neat. Are you the greatest?
Yes.
There's no greatest or lesser. You are it. I am. It means I am. That's all. There's nothing else to compare with. Shall we?
Sure.
I
am.
Am.
I am.
I am too.
I am too. No, you are not too. You just am. Because if you am too, then you're comparing yourself to somebody.
I am.
I am.
I am.
Wow. And now, girls?
I am. Well, I always have been.
But are you now?
I am now, and I always have been.
I'm not interested in your past. If I were interested in your past, I would ask you about it, which I did before. And you didn't cooperate too much there, but that's all right. But you am now.
I am
that,
now.
That's the great thing. And what?
I am.
Not hard to believe. And you?
I am.
And you?
I am.
Now, is there anybody that I have missed? And you?
I am.
I am. Now, we all are. We all are what? What are we talking about?
Whole and perfect.
Whole and perfect. What's that? What's that, Mr. Rich?
I said full of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can interpret that any way you want.
I love you.
Full of the white if you want.
Now, what is Mr. Rich trying to say? What is he trying to say to us? Is he trying to say to us that life is meant to be a joyful experience? Is he saying that everything we do is meant to bring laughter and music and harmony to our hearts? Is he saying that there's not one moment of our life where we're supposed to be serious? Yes. And is he right? Yes. Who are the serious people? The ones who are not there. When you can sit down at the piano and play a beautiful, difficult piece, and you say, it's good. Are you satisfied? Yes. You're satisfied. No? Say what you're thinking.
There's always room for improvement.
Okay.
What happened to I am?
Yeah, what happened to I am right there? He sits down at the piano and he plays a beautiful piece on the piano. Now, does he think that that's a wonderful experience? Is he having a good time? Now, does he think he can improve? No! No! He does not think he can improve, because if he thought he could improve, he would have improved. He gave his best as he played the piano. He gave his very best, and it was fantastic. Now, who would judge that it could be improved? Could he judge it? My wife was a professional pianist and an organist for many, many, many years, and played on stage and all that jazz and had a good time. And so, then, what gave her the most unhappiness was if she were playing a concerto and she made one mistake. And it would destroy her. And I said, Faith, you cannot afford to be destroyed over one mistake. You cannot even hear that mistake. Because if you hear it, you will play it every time you play. So instead of that, hear yourself playing perfectly. Hear yourself playing perfectly. Sweetheart, I'm going to take you and lock you in this room and have you sit there in the dark, playing your pieces on the piano and playing it perfectly. And after 2 months, I'm going to let you out. And then you will play to your heart's content. Now, will she make any mistakes when she has played it perfectly in her mind for a period of time? No. She will do it perfectly. So, when he plays, Mr. Ed will play perfectly. Why? Because that's all he knows how to do. Now, what does perfectly mean? Perfectly means mechanically perfect. Now, when Pam sits down at the piano, she plays the piano as though it were some love goddess that she was demonstrating the magic of movement and flow. She has, the music just has body to it, and the music has a magic to it, and everyone who hears it says, oh, I have goosebumps all over me when I hear you play. And then Ed plays there. He plays the piano, and he has this force about him. He has this power about him, and he chooses a musical piece that demonstrates his power. And he plays this concerto with strength and with dynamics. And you listen to that music and you say, I'm floating, I'm rising, because you're into the music, what he is playing. Now, they could both play the same piece, and it'd be different. We watched a piece on television the other night. The name of it, it was a video, and the young man was a musician, and he got a job as being a teacher teaching music in school. And so as he was teaching the youngsters music in school, the youngsters were saying, boring, boring, teaching music appreciation and so forth. So then he realized, hey, they don't know what I'm talking about. Now, he took a piece from Bach, and he played the piece from Bach, and he said, you hear this? And they said, boring. And then he took the same piece from Bach and played it according to some very jazzy rendition of it. And the guy said, wow, 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 that is great. That's my type of music. Well, that's merely Bach jazzed up a little bit. The same notes, the same direction, a different tenor, a different implement to it, but it's the same. And then he played some others. He says, now you think that this is only one. He said, now here's another piece. And he played it jazzy. And he said, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he said, but here is how the original writer, Beethoven, and others had written it. And he played four or five pieces for them. And he said, now, you see, you're missing out by not knowing the foundation of this music. And if you know the foundation of this music, you can take it into any realm you want. You can move it into any dramatic dynamics that you want. And it will sound glorious. But if you just hear it as a piece unto itself, you don't know where it comes from. You don't know how fabulous it is. You don't know how beautiful it is. Now, was it Prince Charles or William? Prince William. Prince William over in England. He's a prince. And he's raised somewhat like a prince. His mother's not around, but he's raised somewhat like a prince. And when he goes in public, he is a prince. Now, he doesn't know how to slouch and come out, you know, real cool. He is a prince. He's got his spine straight. He's got his attitude straight. He's got his consciousness straight. And he comes out, and he's with his friends, and he tries to be jazzy with them. He tries to be cool with his contemporaries, and it doesn't work. But nonetheless, his contemporaries admire his try. And so they accept him because they know he really wants to try. But he cannot change who he is, the foundation of who he is. He cannot become an unprince just because he wants to be one of the gang. What he has had built into his consciousness, into his character, as he was developing from a young man into the young man that he became, can never be lost. He will always be a prince, and he will be a good prince. But he will be a prince because he wants to be one with the gang. Not one with the gang doing whatever they're doing. He wants to be one with them, and he cannot help but be a prince. He cannot help but be a loving person. He cannot help but be a sharing person. He cannot help but be a true and beautiful person. And this is what we are. Each one of you, each one of us, are God. We are the allness of God. We are the totality of God. We are the wholeness of the universe. We are the spirit, mind, the soul. We are the essence of the universe. And insofar as we are, we can never say we are not. We can never act as though we are not, because who we really are shines through so perfectly and so magnificently, no matter what happens, we are still there, being that perfect self. We used a term, I trust my husband, I trust my wife. That means we don't trust them. Do you trust yourself? You're an alcoholic, and you're no longer into alcohol, you want to stay away from it, and you say, I am an alcoholic, and so that people help you stay away from it and say, ha ha, she's an alcoholic, she can't take it any longer. But what does she say? She says, I am master of my habit. Now, if she says, I'm an alcoholic, people are going to treat her as a person who at one time was not in charge of her being. One time who was not in charge of her world, of her magnificence. And no matter how good she is today, no matter how perfect she is today, no matter how much she has left the past behind, as long as she keeps calling herself an alcoholic or a narcotic or an addict or something like that, she will be there. Not because she's still on drugs, but because she has this picture painted by everyone in her world who visualizes her as having that experience. Now, is this where you want to be? Do you want to be called a human being? Well, it's kind of nice. Do you want to be called a divine being? That would be... What does that mean? Yes, what does it mean to be called a divine being? All is in divine order. Does that sound pretty good? Do you know what it means? No, you have no idea what it means. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Do you know what it means to live in your ideal spirit, mind, and body? Yeah, the slightest idea. Sounds good. Okay. Let's go the direction where it sounds good. Let's go the direction where we have labeled it as perfect and beautiful and high and desirable. I live in a world expressing that which is for my highest and best. You understand? I live in a world that expresses what is for my highest and best. Now, what is for my highest and best? Do you know? Do any of us know? No. But we do know that when we speak our word, that I live in my highest and best, and I am the master of my habits, then we are master of our habits. Now, do you like to say snide little remarks about people? No. Did you ever like to do that? Maybe. But, you see, yeah, I don't think so. But you see, why is she saying, I don't think so?
Just in case of a
She is saying that that's not her nature. Whereas, if it ever had been her nature, she's not going to recall that. She's not going to recall if it ever had been her nature. All she's going to recall is that now she lives from her highest and her best. Now she lives from the purity and goodness of her reality. Where do you guys live from? The highest and best of your purity and reality? We're talking about healing. And right now, all of you are whole and perfect. Now, Matthew, I want you to put a picture in your mind of the perfect Francine and all the rest of you. Put a picture in your mind of your perfect self. I don't want you to look at yourself as you appear. You may be handsome and virile and beautiful and lovely and what have you, but picture in your mind what you think would be the ideal of yourself. What kind of person would it be? Would it be a tall, a short, a fat, a slim? Would it be an intelligent? Would it be a gracious? Would it be a charming, a beautiful person? Now, don't go laughing. Come on, Thelma. My goodness sakes. What kind of a person would it be? And you don't go looking.
No, she's doing great.
I know she's doing great, but she's doing her thing. Now, what are you doing yours?
Yeah, of course.
Now, what is your ideal perfect self? What is it? Now, I would love to have you, between now and the next time I come back to speak to you, if you want me, between now and that time, I would like to have you spend time, definite time, writing down on a sheet of paper what is your ideal picture of yourself. Now, you're not going to say, I'm 130 pounds, I am 5 foot tall, I am, you know, this and that. That's not the point. Did you ever look at a picture of Adonis or Terpsichore? You know what Terpsichore is? Terpsichore is the goddess of dance and music. Adonis is the man who is the goddess of beauty, of male beauty and so on like that, of handsomeness and stuff. And Mercury and all these other Greek gods. Well, why don't you just take a book on mythology? They're available at the library. And then find the picture that you want. And then take the book over to the copy machine and make a copy of that picture. And then take that picture and put it up on your mirror. If your wife or husband isn't here, they may enjoy the experience. And put that picture up in the mirror. And then, please, when you were sweet 16 or 25, whatever you like, get a picture of yourself about that age. And cut your head off. And put it on top of the picture of this beautiful Terpsichore or this beautiful Greek god. Now, what that does, it takes you away from the image that you have of yourself right now. You say, well, I'm never going to be 18 again. Well, you are still 18 right now. Inside of this mind, inside of this head, inside of this body, is our 10-year-old, 20-year-old, whatever we are, that body, that mind, that soul. Now, it has not forsaken you. It has not left you. It has not said, hey, you're not taking care of it, you don't get it. It's still there. It's waiting to be revealed. And this is what we are learning to do. All is, and we are revealing all that is. So we want to reveal that self of ourself who was the perfect 18, the perfect 20, the perfect whatever we like. And think about it. Think about it. And you say, well, Herb, I've been through that before. I did that when I was a kid. You know, when I was a kid, I'd take Charles Atlas out of the magazine, cut my head on, put it on top, right, Bob? And it worked. It worked. That's great. But
I still are.
There you go. I love you. Yeah. But this is what we do. This is what we do. And then how do we feel?
Yes.
And I love seeing young kids who are uninhibited. And they stand around posing, you know, and doing things like this, you know, and they've nothing to pose. they're just young people with young bodies, you know. But they think of themselves as, you know, Schwarzenegger. They think of themselves as Charles Atlas. They think of themselves as a well-developed young being. And that's great, because as they put that picture in their consciousness, they rise to that in their thinking. Now, you, as you put that picture in your consciousness, so is your physical body. Now, you're getting closer to your ideal self. Not that your ideal self has to be this beautiful body, but you have allowed yourself to be, you know, careless about your body. We have allowed that to happen to us. And as we allow it to happen, our body begins to get tired and flabby and old and other silly things. And it does not have to be that way. It does not have to be that way. How many of you know Graham? what's your first name?
Martha
Graham. I used to dance with her ballet group when they were in Milwaukee. I was just a sub. And we had a lot of black kids who were dancing with her, and I was dancing with her. And it was just a great experience, a great experience. I really wasn't that good, but I had a lot of fun. And I had a great growing up experience by that. And the growing up experience was, why not? Why not? When I danced with the Waltos or Corollaires, you know, and sang with them, we square danced and did everything with them. I wasn't Tom Selleck or something like that, but I was me. And I liked me. And I enjoyed what I was doing. And people didn't say, oh, you are bad, you know, which is meaning good, but they didn't say, you know, get off the stage. Mm-mm. They just said, hey, great, go for it. You see, the wonderful thing was that they did not judge me, and I did not judge myself. They did not tell me I was good or bad, and I did not tell me I was good or bad. I just got in there and had a good time. And it was wonderful. And some of you may have heard of Johnny Mercer. Well, he used to broadcast from our basement in Wauwatosa. Johnny Mercer had his WTMJ radio station show, and he'd bring it to our house and broadcast out of our basement. And it was just lots of fun. You see, these things you can do. Now, Johnny Mercer, my gosh, he went on to become quite famous. Well, he was just an ordinary person at that time. You know, he was just a WTMJ person. Just like I published newspapers and magazines. I was just an ordinary person, you know. But look at people who went on from being ordinary people to being extraordinary people. You are an extraordinary person. You are a beautiful person. You have the capacity to be whatever you visualize yourself to be. And unfortunately, you're visualizing yourself to be what you appear to be right now. Which is not bad, but it's just a step on the ladder of awareness. Start visualizing yourself to be the beautiful being that your ideal archetypal self is. What is your beautiful archetypal self? It is so wonderful, so desirable, so glorious, so magnificent that you cannot hardly see it. So turn up that rheostat a little bit so you get past this outer shell. And as you turn up that rheostat, you will see yourself as you really are, a fabulous, glorious, fulfilled being. Because that's who you really are. That's who you really are. Now, you take a look at Phyllis here, and you say, isn't she beautiful? And then you take a look at her on the cover of the book, and you say, wow, she is really beautiful. And then you look at her again, and you say, yes, she is beautiful. You see, but you see, you look at her now, she's dressed casually. On the cover of her book, she's dressed very, very sexy. You know, very, very fantastic, very becomingly, you know. Now you, right now, you're wearing casual clothes like myself, and you're being casual and wonderful. Now, what would you do if you went to your son's wedding or your daughter's wedding? What would you wear? Would you wear your jeans or something? Maybe, if it's a casual wedding, and some weddings are casual, but just say it's a nice church wedding. Maybe you're even conducting it. Let's say that. Let's say you're conducting your son's wedding or your daughter's wedding, on any of you. What would you wear? They're going to be wearing their tuxedo, their blue tuxedo, and she in her wonderful gown, whatever it is, and you're going to come there in your casual outfit? No. You're going to come in there in a very lovely dress. You're going to come there in a very fine-cut suit. You're going to pull in your tummy, and you're going to throw out your chest. This is my kid getting married. I got him through the tough part of life. Now the rest is an easy throw for them because I've watch it, because I've given them the principles by which to live a beautiful life. Now, Bob, be careful. Hey, ups and downs are fine, but just realize that it is just an up and down and flow, and that they are going a wonderful path. They're going, you know, it's up to you, Bob. It's up to you to take the line that goes up and down like this and pull it a little bit, you know, straighten out for them a little bit. And you know what happens when you straighten out the line?
No, what happens?
Life becomes very boring. And when your lifeline is straightened out on the machine, you're dead. So be happy that they have this wonderful ups and down and vibration. But just realize that the ups and downs are going like this, up and up and up and up. You know, when the stock market goes like that, it goes up and up and up and up. You say, ah, yes, 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 yes. And when it goes, whoop, whoops, up, 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 up. Australia, their money system went right straight up. And there are many others. Let's look at a couple of your questions here. He wrote, complete this sentence. Clutter is a sign of? Clutter, huh? Clutter is a sign. Clutter is a sign of, oh God? Clutter is a sign of, oh God? Well, no, he wrote this question probably. But clutter is a sign of one thing, your attitude toward what you're observing. I have worked in many newspaper offices, and I've worked for many editors, and I've been editor and publisher myself of many publications. And many of the newspaper publishers, especially the older ones, they had their old top desk and all that good stuff, and they would have that full of stuff. And yeah, I look at them. Oh, how do you know it's there? And they pull down the roll top so that people wouldn't see it. And then they put up the roll top, and they'd reach here, tuck, pull out this, tuck, pull out this. They knew right where everything was. That's their filing system. Now, was that clutter? No, that was their way of organizing things. Today, how many of you have computers? How many of you have clutter on your computers? How many? Yeah. You don't really have clutter. All you have to do is every once in a while, make a file saying clutter 1, clutter 2, clutter 3, and then gather all the things together and put it in the clutter 1 and close it, you see? And when you want to search for something, just go in your clutters and look for it. But don't call it clutter. Just say my stuff, you know, or things or whatever. Now, it's the same as the editor, but the clutter is only in our mental attitude about it. Do you have a mental attitude? Your life is full of clutter? Or is your life order? Is your life in divine order? All in divine order. Is your computer all in divine order? Do you know where everything is on your computer? Do you know how to press a button and bring everything up? Do you know how to use the programs that are available? Takes a lot of study to do this. They should really have a computer system for people who are not into computers, and the computer system says, here's how to write stories, here's how to read email, here's how to make copies of things, and here's how to delete, you know. And just do those simple things. And then there will be no spam. There will be no stuff that you don't want on there, no viruses and other things, because it's so simple. The computers that get more and more complex, more and more people want to get to it and rip it apart. So what is it your mother always told you? Keep it
simple,
sweetheart. Keep it, shut up. Keep it simple, sweetheart. Not stupid. Keep it simple, sweetheart. And if you keep it simple, then everything you do is easy and simple and beautiful. And who has clutter? The one who calls it clutter. I call it herb stuff. Okay? It says, Gilligan. How about that? Gee, Professor, I didn't know it was impossible when I did it. Gilligan, I guess he said that to the professor, yeah. So remember Gilligan's Island? And he said, gee, Professor, I didn't know it was impossible when I did it. Now, Gilligan would say something like that. Now, why would he say something like that? He was so innocent in the story. He was so naive. He just went out and did whatever he was told to do, not knowing he couldn't do it. And whenever there was something for him to accomplish, he just accomplished it, not thinking he couldn't do it. He had to get the boat pulled in. He had to, well, the things that they did on Gilligan's Island were absolutely without, it's crazy. Because he would create things and do things. They would have the little houses they lived in, you know, and all of these things, they were rather grand. And Professor and the rich man and his wife, what was his name?
Mr. Howe
and his wife, right? You see, what were they doing? The writers were just being crazy. And that was a perfect entree to Star Trek. And then on to other shows. Now, you think that that's interesting. They're going to get over these sitcoms about people who do not have principles, and people who live together in family groups who are the young 30s, some who, the people don't do this. You think they do this because that's what they put on television. You think that men go off on their wives with other women and that women go off with other men. You think they do that because that's what they put on television. Well, you may know people like that, but let me tell you, on the face of the earth, we're getting close to 7 billion people. 7 billion people. Now, if there are, let's say, 30 or 300 million people who are masters, that's not a lot. If there are 800 million people in the hospital, that's a lot. Because there aren't. If there are, say, 30 million hospitals in the world, my God, it'd be fantastic. 30 million hospitals in the world? Stop and think. It'd be impossible. There's maybe about 5 million hospitals in the world. But look at all the cities. They don't have hospitals. They have clinics, maybe. But real hospitals, very few. How many people are sick? Virtually none. Out of 7 billion people, almost none are sick. Out of 7 billion people, how many are in prison or in jail? Or how many are are caught for doing things that they shouldn't be doing? Not very many. What is the average person, not average, what is, let's say, 6 billion, you know, just 6 billion people. Take a billion and fool around with them. But take 6 billion, and what are they doing? They are not in the hospital. They are not sick. They are not having bad marriages. They are not having illicit relationships. They are not doing things that are against their highest nature. They are not doing it. You prove to me by just numbering them and adding them up, and they're not there. Because the normalcy of life is to live according to principle and according to law. That's the normalcy. And when we think that it is okay to do things, we are authorizing ourselves to think it's okay. When you see people doing things that you feel is incorrect, are you authorizing them to do it? In a way, yes. When you see people who are doing things that are incorrect to do, what are boys allowed to do? Have sex with girls? No, they aren't. Boys are allowed to wait until they choose to get married to have sex with girls if they want. And this is a normal thing. What are girls allowed to do? Girls are allowed to wait and have marriage and have sex. But 50% of the marriages fall into the divorces and stuff. But don't forget, that's 50% of the marriages. And the marriages are marriages. They have, say, 100% of the marriages. Of the marriages, they have 50% that work and 50% that don't. Let's think about those 50% that do and say, that's pretty good. 50% of people who never knew each other before and got together and thought they'd have a great old time together and enjoy each other's bodies and enjoy each other's lives, and you do this and you do this and you do this, you know, and tell the other person what to do like the mom and pop did. And then all of a sudden that person says, I will not get out of here. I don't want to see you again, you know. And boop, there goes the marriage. Now you see, what were they taught by their parents? Stop and think. How many people on the face of the earth get married? You'd be very surprised to know what the figures were. I would too. But the figures of the number of people on the face of the earth who get married, of 7 billion people, I would say might be a billion people. The rest of them don't get married because they don't want to live together with other people. Of the population of the United States, 35% are unmarried. 35% are single, unmarried, successful people living their life, having a good job and having good homes and so on. And there are other figures like that. And of the people of the United States, I think there's something like 40% of the children are taught at home. At home? My God, yes. And those who are taught at home are more brilliant than those who are taught at school because they are challenged by their parent or the teacher at home to be a higher and a greater standard than they would otherwise. Now, you got a problem? Let's work at it. Let's figure it out. You got a problem? Stay after school. Got it. Go to the principal. Do this or that. You know. And there's no real caring to help the child move into his highest and best. So don't give yourself the luxury of thinking what human beings have told you is true. Because the divine in you knows better. Does a child always want to do what's for their highest and best? Yes. If they know what you think their highest and best is. I have a golden retriever. He's 6 months old. His greatest joy is to please me. His greatest joy is to be by my side. I sit on the toilet, he sits by my side. I sit in a chair, he sits by my side. I sit at my desk, he gets under my desk, wants me for a footstool, or him for a footstool. But I mean, wherever I am, he's there. He wants to please me. Our children are the same way. They want to please us. And what do we give them as an example so that they can please us? We watch television 30-something. We watch all of these shows that we don't recommend they live their life like that, but we approve of these things by watching it. And by approving it, by watching it, we endorse it. And then we wonder why our children turn out rotten. Any parent who has a child that turns out not too good has not given that child the training at the time they needed it to have confidence in themselves, to have principles and have values. Now, I'm not saying the parent's bad. I'm just saying, if you're going to have children, don't become a professional person with no time for the children. If you're going to have children during their growing up years, they deserve to have a good portion of your time every day. Her son, a stupid jerk, got married, had this kid. For 8 years, this kid fit in somewhere between the time they went to work and went to come home after work and go to bed, and got 10 minutes maybe of really not valued time. Then they separated. And so the father tries to get the son to love him. The mother tries to get the son. And they're having better time with the kid than they had before. Not necessarily the best, but better. They're giving attention. And they're saying, here's our values. Here's what we do. Here's what this is. Now, if they were married, they didn't do it. Why didn't they do it if they were married? Because they hadn't had that experience at home. They hadn't had that quality time with their parent at home. Now, I'm not saying that Ellen was a terrible mother. I'm not indicating that in any way at all. I'm just saying she was a normal mother, busy with her tennis, busy with her society life that she lived. And the father was busy with his business life. And the kids did what they did. And now we are seeing the mother turning around, talking to the son, and saying to him, follow your heart, sweetheart. If you feel that leaving your wife is the right thing to do, then you follow your heart. You listen to the divine in you, and the divine in you will guide you. And he now feels, hey, maybe I should rethink my values. Maybe I should rethink where I am. And whether he gets married again or stays married to the same woman is unimportant, but he's rethinking his values. Now, if she could have done that before, when he was growing up, so that when he grew up, he would have values that he based his life on, how wonderful for him. Now, what about you? How have you raised your children? It's not too late. You can put the cause in motion today. I surround my child with my pure white light of love. All their ways are peace and all their paths are pleasantness. You can say today, all is in divine order in my life and in the life of my children, in the life of my family, in the life of my world. See, you are the master. What do you want? What sort of things are important to you? What sort of things do you want to express in your world? It's up to you. You can have anything you want as long as you make up your mind. I'm going to get my bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits and let everything be in divine order. Let's see if we have any further question here. I think we've pretty well answered it. Conflict, clutter, and Mr. Gilligan. And with that, we have come to any other questions you'd like to ask before we part company or do whatever comes next? Anybody got a question? Just go ahead and shout it. Yes, you had a question?
No.
Are you happy?
Oh, sure.
One, yeah. You two?
Sure.
You all happy?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, sir?
Talk about affirmations and the importance of words. I just wanted to share the mission statement from the healthcare system that I work for.
He works for a healthcare organization, and this is their mission statement. As I told you about the one in Germany, how they said they had their Kranken card for the people, and they changed it to the Gesundheit card, good health card. His mission statement is, through our exceptional health care services, we reveal the healing presence of God. That's a step in the right direction. That's a giant leap in the right direction. Isn't that beautiful? What health care are you with? Edward McGraw, Web Project Coordinator, Information Center, SSM Health Card. beautiful, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't that beautiful?
That is great.
Now, can you see why he's such a beautiful man? He works with that in his consciousness every day. We can work with that in our consciousness every day, too. And that's an honor to have an attitude like that. Any other comments? You want to make a comment on that? Are you happy?
Oh, yeah. I just thought it was worth sharing.
Well, it is worth sharing, I think, very much. In fact, I like even a copy of it. Mm-hmm. So, anything further from anybody? Okay, tomorrow we will have a wonderful church service, two of them, I presume, and I will be privileged to give a, you said, 15 to 20 minute talk at each one, and I'm not going to pull any punches. We'll get some real nice positive attitudes and ideas, just like we've done here. And then in the afternoon, we will have a special program. The morning worship service will be using the law of cause and effect to heal. And then in the afternoon, next step illumination. And in the idea of next step illumination, we're going to move from where we are right now in our thinking into how we can have the next step in our life be illumination, where we let go and be right now all that we are. Once again, thank you. It's an honor and privilege to be with you, and have a lovely day and a lovely evening.
Thank you.
I love you. Thank you.